Aranyasyatha
Vagrama
Atim
Vichinvati
Kim
Munivad
Raho
Vane
Vad
Angri
Kamata
Samasta
Kamam
Va
Padma
Koshav
Adita
Paragrat
Vamhrir Bhavantyasyata
Vagrama
Patim
Vichinvati
Kim Munivadraho
Vane
Varangri
kamapta
samasta
kamam
Vapadma
koshaf
patitah
karagrat
Vam hir
bhavantyasya
ratava
grama
patim
Vichinvati
kim
munivadraho
vane
Varangri
kamapta
samasta
kamam
Vapadma
koshah
patitah
karagrata Husband,
Virin,
Vi
Vichinvati.
Vichinvati.
Searching after.
Searching after.
Thinking of.
Kim.
Are you?
Are you?
Munivat.
Munivat.
Like a sage.
Like a sage.
Raha.
Raha.
In this lonely place. Vane.
In the forest.
Farangri.
Your feet.
Kama.
Desiring.
Apta.
Achieve.
Samasta.
All.
Kamam.
Desirable things.
Kva.
Where is.
Padmakosha.
The lotus flower.
Pagita.
Fallen.
Kara.
Of the hand.
Agrat.
From the front portion.
Or palm.
Translation.
My dear beautiful girl, you are exactly like the goddess of fortune, or the wife of Lord Shiva, or the goddess of learning, the wife of Lord Brahma. Although you must be one of them, I see that you are loitering in this forest. Indeed, you are as silent as the great sages. Is it that you are searching after your own husband? Whoever your husband may be, simply by understanding that you are so faithful to him, he will come to possess all opulences. I think you must be the goddess of fortune, but I do not see the lotus flower in your hand. Therefore, I am asking you where you have thrown that lotus. Purport. Everyone thinks that his intelligence is perfect. Sometimes one employs his intelligence in the worship of Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, in order to obtain a beautiful wife. Sometimes when one wants to become learned as Lord Brahma, he employs his intelligence in worship of the goddess of learning, Saraswati. Sometimes when one wishes to become as opulent as Lord Vishnu, he worships the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. In this verse, all these inquiries are made by King Gauranjan, the living entity who is bewildered and does not know how to employ his intelligence. Intelligence should be employed in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As soon as one uses his intelligence in this way, the goddess of fortune automatically becomes favorable to him. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, never remains without her husband, Lord Vishnu. Consequently, when one worships Lord Vishnu, he automatically obtains the favor of the goddess of fortune. One should not, like Ravana, worship the goddess of fortune alone, for she cannot remain long without her husband. Thus, her other name is Chanchala, or restless. In this verse, it is clear that Puranjana is representing our intelligence. While he is talking with the girl, he not only appreciated the shyness of the girl, but actually became more and more attracted by that shyness. He was actually thinking of becoming her husband, and consequently was asking whether she was thinking of her prospective husband or whether she was married. This is an example of bhoga icha, the desire for enjoyment. One who is attracted by such desires becomes conditioned in this material world, and one who is not attracted attains liberation. One who is not so attracted attains liberation. King Puranjana was appreciating the beauty of the girl as if she were the goddess of fortune. But at the same time, he was careful to understand that the goddess of fortune cannot be enjoyed by anyone except Lord Vishnu. Since he doubted whether the girl was the goddess of fortune, he inquired about the lotus flower she was not holding. The material world is also the goddess of fortune because the material energy works under the direction of Lord Vishnu, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Mayadyakshena prakriti suyate sa chara charam. The material world cannot be enjoyed by any living entity. If one so desires to enjoy it, he immediately becomes a demon like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, or Kamsa. Because Ravana wanted to enjoy the goddess of fortune, Sita Devi, he was vanquished with all his family, wealth, and opulence. One can, however, enjoy the maya bestowed upon the living entity by Lord Vishnu. The satisfaction one senses and desires means enjoying maya, not the goddess of fortune. So, here now Paranjan is furthering his distraction with the material energy. So he is appreciating the good qualities, the beauty, right? And so the quality is being brought out specifically again and again as shyness. Because that shyness then is the actually most attractive feature. It means in the modern environment, other features have tried to be used. But unfortunately, it doesn't bring out, it may attract men, but it doesn't bring out any worthwhile quality that, having attracted, you would want to spend any time with such a person. Sad, but true. So, he is appreciating the quality, so that means then she must be of some higher character, higher class, higher quality, because to, in public, use shyness, which is the natural, still it takes training. Because everything takes time. You want to cook, it takes time. You know, a subject will take you 20 minutes. That's cooking. Then there's preparation beforehand. You want something quicker than 20 minutes, then get on the phone and make a phone call. Right? They're supposed to deliver it within 15. But the quality of what you're getting is less. It's that simple. Patience. Shyness takes patience. It takes good qualities. It takes character to be able to use it. You want something quicker, then who would use quicker except someone who has no training, someone who has no patience, someone who does not know of real human value and interaction. Because it's so much more powerful, it's so much more valuable. It lasts for longer. Because shyness is a natural inherent quality. It can always be appreciated. But aggressiveness can't be. It has a limit. It has a particular element. Means it generates a drive. But if you don't have that enthusiasm, you won't respond with the drive. So therefore, that means no attraction. Simple. Shyness is passive. So therefore, it can always be appreciated. For a lifetime. A girl can always be shy. Even if she's 40, 50, 60, she can still be shy and attractive. But other things, as the older we get, the more strange they become with other techniques. So here is, we're dealing with human life. The Bhagavatam is dealing with human life. If we ever feel these stories in Bhagavatam don't apply to us, then it's a simple formula. Yes, they don't apply because you're not practicing human life. It's that simple. The Vedic literatures deal with humans. If you can't relate to it, you're not human. But don't worry. Devotional service can be practiced by anybody. Even the, that's what it says, Prabhupada says, even the dogs can take part, right? So, don't worry. It still works. On the devotional side, materially, it'll be a rough ride, it'll be bad, it'll be terrible, but devotionally, you can still go back to Godhead, so don't worry about it. Right? So, here is that, then continuing with this, is that his appreciation, then he's becoming so enamored that now he's comparing her to the demigods. Which is natural, it's fine. But the problem is that what's not fine is that he thinks it's the quality of the demigod that he himself can enjoy. Lakshmi can only be enjoyed by Vishnu. Saraswati only by Brahma. Uma only by Lord Shiva. So seeing these kind of qualities, higher qualities, appreciating the fine points within the feminine nature, that is only someone who's trained. He's a hero. It's always mentioned the hero hero means that he has qualities. It's the good qualities that make for a hero and heroine. Right? If there's no good qualities, it's called, you know, a male and female dog. Right? So here the fine qualities are being brought out. But the difficulty is this, the desire to enjoy them ourselves. This is the reason that we're here. To appreciate and to understand that this intelligence is coming from here, this opulence or beauty, all these things are coming from the Lord and His consort. That's fine. That's not the complaint. That's not our problem with this part of the story. The problem is what the Prabhupada said, bhoga icha, the desire for enjoyment. It's not a problem. It means in the spiritual world, okay, let's take an example. When we're dealing with something, just because it's beautiful doesn't mean it's bad. Right? Let's say you're going out to buy some paraphernalia for the deity. Right? If there's something that's more attractive and something that's less, though they have the same function, the tendency is to buy the one that's more attractive. Does that make sense? So, therefore, the principle of beauty is not a problem. The Vedic literature doesn't have a problem that women are beautiful and attractive. The point is that beauty and attraction comes from the Lord, therefore it's supposed to be offered back to the Lord. Right? It's not that you dress everybody up in potato sacks. Right? And ideally, if you can get the right color, then black potato sacks. That's not the idea. Mundane religionists will think this way. But that's not the problem. The point is the beauty is not the problem, but since the beauty doesn't belong to us, therefore it has to be appreciated in the right way and used in the right way. Right? Let us say I have a television. I can say it's my television. Therefore I can do whatever I want with it. But can I throw it out of my apartment window down into the street? I can say, well, I feel like it. Yeah, but if it goes down there and hits a car, then? So this is the problem. We're either appreciating beauty or we have beauty. And we're under the foolish misconception that it's ours and we can do with it whatever we want. That's nonsense. This beauty, this attraction, all these things are connected to the Lord. They have to be connected back to the Lord. Then there's no problem. That's why in the Vedic civilization, the beauty is there, the nice dress, everything is there. Krishna and Radharani dress, they're very attractive. Right? They're in public, you can see them. But they're not using that beauty for their own purpose. That's the difference. Here we use it for our own purpose. In the spiritual world, they don't use it for their own purpose. So if you want to go to the spiritual world, this is what we have to do. We have to recognize that what is here, the opulence, everything. That's why we have no problem. So much opulence, so much facility is used in Krishna's service, right? Other religionists, you know, philosophical groups may complain, oh, it's just all about money, it's all about facility, it's all about, you know, prestige. In their mind, yes. But in the mind of the acharyas, no. It all belongs to God anyway. So it's not that you can only use things that are not nice in Krishna's service. You can use things that are nice in Krishna's service. But the point is yukta vairagya. The word vairagya is part of the terminology, the phrase. Yukta means connected to Krishna, vairagya means without our own desire to enjoy it. Then it's connected. Otherwise, just the word falling out of the mouth. It's one of the cheapest words we have in the movement nowadays, yukta vairagya. I mean cheap. You know, I mean, you can find it in, you know, a gutter in Calcutta cheap. You know, and if you pick it up, you might get a disease. Why? Because we don't listen to what it means. Hearing is the first thing. Yukta is connected to the Lord. vairagya. The result of that connection is not for us. That's yukta vairagya. So that is what the Bhagavatam's talking about. Bhagavatam doesn't have any problem that Paranjan will marry this woman, or he's attracted to this woman. That's not a problem at all. Why should that be a problem? Right? Because whatever opulence, beauty is, that's what Krishna makes. You behave nicely, you look good. You don't behave nicely, you don't look good. Right? It's that simple. Right? Astavakra Muni probably used to look good. He insulted his father. Then the result, he didn't look so good. Right? It's just the way it works. So, beauty just means there's some piety there in some area. But if it's not used in the Lord's service, then opulence is lost. That's all. It just goes away. So the problem is not that the facility is here. It's not that he's, the problem is that he's attracted. The problem is he's attracted and not seeing it in connection with the Lord. Remembering this analogy, this story that's being told by Narad Muni is about the conditioned living entity. Right? The conditioned living entity. But it's not that the transcendentalist can't appreciate something's beautiful. It's just not for them. It's not that Sukadeva Goswami running down the path naked, seeing the naked girls, doesn't understand that they're nice looking. The point is they're not for him. He's a renunciate, so he doesn't have that kind of interaction. That's for someone else. That's what the girls are appreciating. They can understand there's no boga icha. You know, this idea that, oh, you can't see, you can't smell, you can't taste, that's the Mayavadi's concept. And that arises because of our own attachment. Right? We're so attached, therefore, it means material world is opposite to the spiritual world, so we're attached, so therefore spiritual means repulsed. No, spiritual means just no interest. Right? Does that make sense? Right? You know, we've given the example before, is that we may be extremely hungry, right? And then we come across some nice mahaprasad, right? Just the kind of prasad that we like and all that. And just as we're about to take, then someone comes and says, hey Prabhu, it's Ekadasi today. Right? So now do we become repulsed? Oh, this grain. No, we just go, oh, and that's it. There's no attraction. There's no repulsion. That's spiritual. So since you have no duty with it, you don't do anything with it. Right? Now those people, they make the offering, they transfer the plate, they have a duty. That's why they're dealing with the grains on Ekadasi. But they're not trying to enjoy them. That's spiritual. So therefore all facility, all opulence, all niceness can be there. But if it's not for Krishna, then it's a waste of time. So that's what's happening here with Paranja. He is seriously wasting his time. It's going to be a whole lifetime of waste. Yeah. So, Prabhupada's pointing out the material world cannot be enjoyed because it belongs to the Lord. If we see it in connection with the Lord, then the Lord being happy with your service, you're happy. It's a simple point. Right? It's also not one of these, how you say, rocket science, right? It's not a difficult thing. Let's say you find, okay. On one flight, we were going, and somehow or another we had ended up in a, I say, area of the plane that wasn't meant for cattle. Right? So then I was observing, I was sitting there, one side, and the other side there was a grandmother and the grandson. And they had their you know, individual flip out of the arm video things. So now, grandmother's there, you know, there's so many shows on there, and there's more shows on there than in the back. But they went through it, found something that the grandchild liked. The grandchild wasn't that old, 7, 8, that kind of age. Found something the child liked, and then, you know, fixed his video so that he could see it nicely. Then the grandmother turned on her one, also put it to the same channel as the child's, and then turned it so that the child could see it also. And then sat leaning over where the child was, you know, watching how he was watching. Right? Now, one could analyze that, well, you know, hey, with this facility, the grandmother could, you know, get much more out of it. But the point was, is because there's a relationship here. The relationship isn't between her and her facilities of her chair. Relationship is between her and the grandchild. Therefore, that relationship is more important than the facilities. So then she dealt with it in relationship, I mean, in the aspect of the relationship for the grandchild's happiness. One could say, well, the grandchild's in the junior position, so it should be all about the grandmother. Yes, this is the modern Western method of cheating. Get into a position of authority and then exploit it. Authority is meant to take care of those who you're authority of. Otherwise, there's no meaning of being authority. If you're supposed to do good work, being an authority means you're supposed to be engaging others in good work. So that engagement is there. She's not trying to enjoy it for herself. So she's happy. It was a very pleasant atmosphere generated between the two. I mean, you go through the airports, you see plenty of parents and grandparents and friends and relatives and all kinds of relationships. Most of them aren't working very nicely, sad to say, but most of them aren't working very well. But this one was outstanding. Because the effort was being made to please the other person from their position and ability. So this is the point, is that acting in such a way that it pleases the Lord, pleases others with the facility at hand, that's natural. That's normal. That is human. The one where we're driving down the road one day and it suddenly hits us with a flash. You know, I've been doing all this service, sacrifice, collecting, you know, everything for the temple. But what about me? That's animal life. And that's what's happened to every devotee who's thought like that. Punar Musika Pava. Right back to where they started. Because the point is it's not all about me. It's all about Krishna. It's all about Krishna's devotees. Right? Krishna means his name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his dham, his associates, his paraphernalia. That's Krishna. Right. So if we're worried about that, then it becomes nice. Then it becomes wonderful. Whatever you're looking for in a relationship, you will find it there. And if you try to squeeze out of it whatever you can, you'll never find it. Why? Because it's an illusion. That this dead matter moves around and has actually anything to do with a relationship between you and the other based on any of the five rasas is an absolute total illusion. It's dead matter. Wake up. But it's Krishna's dead matter. You see it in relationship with Krishna, then whatever is happening will be appreciated. The relationships will be tasted. It's the only way. Try anything else. It doesn't work. You may have a new theory, how, oh, it didn't work this way, it'll work that way. That's called mental speculation. It still doesn't work. People have been doing this since time immemorial. If it was so easy, then Western civilization would have already had it worked out with the Greeks, right? And then we've been, you know, just riding on the wave of their, you know, the benefits of their intelligence for the last, you know, so many thousands of years. But each week you can walk into a bookstore and there's a new book on the shelf to tell you how to be happy in this world. I'm not joking. Right? But it's not happening. Why? Because they're trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. So this is the point. Paranjana is trying to take these things and separately enjoy them. That's why the Vedic literature is a given. The Vedic literatures, we have to understand, the rules of the Vedic literatures is how Krishna likes it. One of the 64 qualities of Krishna is that he follows the Shastra. So why would he follow the Shastra? He's independent. He's the supreme. So it means that the Shastra is defining what he likes. Right? If I like something and I write it down, right? And so I'll naturally act according to that, right? But for pastime, you know, it gets kind of old if it's, you know, it's always your game, this, that. No, you're absorbed in the game just as much as everybody else, even though it's your game, it's your rules. So these are the rules on how to interact with Krishna, how to see Krishna. But if you don't see Krishna, then like Paranjana, you're just going to be another pious person. I don't know that there's anybody on the planet that's as pious as Paranjana. He's pious. He's following Shastra. It's not wrong, according to Shastra, to tell a good-looking girl she looks good. It's not wrong. Right? He's a hero. She's a hero. What's the problem? Right? She's alone. She may need some protection. It's not a problem. Shastra says, women are to be protected. So what's wrong? He's doing all these nice things. What's wrong? He's not seeing it connected to the Lord. That's the problem. Otherwise, we'll become distracted by piety and we'll just become like every other religionist on the planet. Be nice, be good. Even the Mayavadis do that. The Buddhists do that. Atheists, be nice, be good. Religionists, be nice, be good. Moralists, be nice, be good. Cutthroat businessmen, you're supposed to be nice, be good. Right? Everyone wants everybody else to be nice and good. And of course, I can do whatever I like, but hey. But being nice and good means nice and good according to Krishna's standards. It already includes everything else. As Prabhupada says, if you have 100 rupees, 5 and 10 rupees and 1 rupee are already included. So in Krishna's culture, everything's included. It's not the detail. Krishna's culture is not the detail. Right? Krishna's culture is the principle of proper behavior, proper responsibility, proper use of intelligence, use of the senses. So that's, you know, part of what's being given here. Yeah, here it says, one, the material world cannot be enjoyed by any living entity. One can, however, enjoy that Maya bestowed upon the living entity by Lord Vishnu. The satisfaction of one's senses and desires means enjoying Maya, not the goddess of fortune. So what's your quota according to your work, that you can try to enjoy. But it'll be temporary, it'll go away. But if you see it in connection with the Lord, then you get the benefits of what you're looking for, and you get the eternal of developing your relationship with the Lord. Any questions or comments? Yes. That fundamental dingus there.
Sometimes we not conscious of how Krishna reciprocates with us, and therefore we not basically taste the relationship with him, and therefore we think to get the relationship from somewhere else, unconsciously or consciously or whatever, how we can get over that problem or anatta or whatever is it, that we conscious of Krishna's reciprocation.
Be conscious of Krishna's reciprocation. Point is that when you think of let us go back before, you know, like Magna Carta and other things like that, or even with Magna Carta, hey. It's, let's say you have criminals, right? And they're put in jail. Now, if there isn't human rights groups, what kind of facility are you going to give those prisoners? Right? No human rights groups, no Amnesty International, no nothing. No one's going to bother you. What are you going to give them? Basically nothing. I remember, I think it was one devotee was telling me one time that I guess he was doing Sankirtan or something, got picked up, and forget where he was, what country he was. Maybe it was like, I don't know. He was put into jail. So it's this big, huge room, all stone. And there's like 15 other criminals in there, you know, big burly guys and all that. And in the middle of the room, there's one bucket. That's the toilet. Anybody can use it, but hey, you have something. So that's the kind of facility you're going to get. Right? Does that make sense? So, and if you go to any culture anywhere in the world, that's what they generally like to give. Right? But this jail that we're in is very nice. It's so nice we forget we're in jail. It's that good. Who would do that? Right? There's no galactic, Amnesty, there's no Amnesty Galactic there to make sure that the material world is a dungeon is nice, you know. You understand? So the point is that God's made this so nice and everybody goes on as if it's normal life. Why would that happen? Why would that be there? Unless God has affection. Right? Why would there be scripture that shows you how to get out, how to use it and how to get out, unless there's affection? Right? Why would there be a process of deity worship or Sankirtan or any of these unless there's affection? Right? Remember, the concept of eternal damnation comes from conditioned living entities. It doesn't come from scripture. It doesn't come from God. That comes from our feeling that I want to do all nonsense, but I can't. And if anybody else does nonsense, then if they're eternally damned, then I won't do nonsense. But if there's any chance that they, you know, may not be eternally damned, hey, I'll give it a shot. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, there, it means all facility is there. Krishna comes, he's in everything. So that would be the thing that Krishna's there. He's there on that side of the relationship. Second thing is just philosophically is if everything's Krishna, whatever it is here, it's a manifestation of his potencies. Inferior. Right? It means the whole material world is basically, if you want to put it into numbers, you know, give a general, 1/1,000,000,000 of a billionth of kind of like the potency of the Lord. Even that's an over-exaggeration, but it gives an idea. That's the total material creation. You know, and so then Krishna puts everything into it. And so this dead matter, which is the external, which then we think I'm the enjoyer of, but all that potency is the Lord. Why would it be attractive? We're spiritual. Why would we be attracted to dead matter? You know what I'm saying? You have a nice fish, you know, it's a nice goldfish flipping about the water. It's so attractive, you know. It's dead sitting on the sand. Is it attractive? No. So the point is dead's not attractive. So Krishna enters everything because it's all him. That's why it's attractive. So even here, even though we're completely forgetting him, he's coming on one side, interacting with us, because it's the only thing we can interact with. Now, how much affection would it take that you would interact with somebody even though they don't reciprocate at all? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, one can understand that Krishna appreciates. He's just waiting for us. That's why it says the two birds in the tree. He's there, peacefully waiting, patiently waiting. He could be doing something else. Right? Isn't it? You know, like we were saying, the mom could be doing something else. She could be following a career. She could be in a spa. She could be doing so many things. But she wants to spend time with the children. So, is that a waste of time? If you look at it from relationship, no. If you look at it from gaining facilities for relationship, yes. Right? But once you have the facilities, what are you going to do? Unless you appreciate relationship, you're never going to do anything with it. You're going to have it and not be able to use it. Right? So, therefore, what kind of affection has to be there that you're just going to sit there waiting? Right? And now, according to Shastra, this waiting has been since time immemorial. That's a long time. Right? So therefore, affection's there. We're the ones that lacks affection. We can say, oh, how come I'm working so hard? Why doesn't God reciprocate? He's reciprocating. We're the ones that are not reciprocating. It means we're doing something, and that's appreciated, but as soon as you say, I'm doing this, where's the result? That means at that moment you're not acting in the relationship. Right? If I'm eating, I'm appreciating the food. As soon as I stop and go, wow, this is great, this is fabulous, am I eating? No. So as soon as I stop and go, I'm doing everything, what are you doing to reciprocate? At that moment, you're not acting in a relationship at all. So what's the reciprocation for? No, nothing. You know what I'm saying? At least if you're attracted to dead matter, you're attracted. So Krishna can reciprocate as the attractiveness of that dead matter. At least there's something. But if it's all about me, then it's a problem. How do we get over it? By association. It's that's why the association of devotees is so important. Because let us say the area where we may be neglectful of Krishna consciousness, someone else's, that's where their strength is. Right, and then we have the acharyas giving direction and all the associates. So the important thing is that by associating, we see is an area that we take for granted. Someone else puts emphasis into, right? You know, and then and the opposite, where we are, you know, focusing. That's where someone else may not. So that way, you can get so much nice association. Okay. Yes. Send it back.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, the topic of shyness comes up. Can you please comment on how a Vaishnavi can cultivate this all-important quality of shyness, and how you may have observed behavior or interactions that are contrary to cultivating shyness? Any comment, insight you can give?
I mean, shyness is the natural feminine nature. It's the strongest of all the qualities. Because the feminine position being chanchala, being the activity, remembers that we go back to the primordial state that the Lord and His energy are non-different. But that position of the, how you say, try using some terms, see if they work for you. Means you have, let's say, a quality. So there's going to be that aspect of the quality, and then there's going to be the nature of the quality. Then the third thing is going to be the manifestation of it. So let's say child. So you have childness. That is the that inherent nature. That's the principle. That's the masculine aspect. That's what we're attracted to. But it will come through childhood. Within the range of childhood and all that, that is where it can be appreciated. That's the manifestation. But it's still in its neutral state. But then there's the specifics of that childhood. You know, how they laughed or how they, you know, were walking and how they fell over and then, you know, all the different things that, that the children do depending on the state of childhood or childness you appreciate, okay? So the childness and the childhood, you can't actually separate. Though they're different, you can't separate because childness, how will you appreciate it unless there's childhood? You won't see it. It was not manifest. But childhood has no meaning unless there's the basis of childness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, that active element, that changing, that creating all the variety and attractiveness, that's the feminine aspect. So that aspect of constant change, everything, that's feminine. The woman doesn't change, that means the feminine nature is not being manifest so well. It's not, it's being, it doesn't mean it's not mature. It doesn't mean it's not more subtle, instead of so much more obvious. But it just means that it's not in its natural state. So its natural state comes by protection. Right? Krishna is always there. Wherever his his potency is, he's there. That's why the rules for women are always protected means wherever there's women, then men are always there to see that the environment is proper. Right? The women will complain that, you know, they want to do things themselves, this and that. But that's fine. That's natural to complain. But that just is a complaint for creation of more variety. Or that the man has to think of newer ways in which she can act in new, various, more outgoing ways, more dynamic, that's still protected. It doesn't mean, is this me? Does that make sense? So, in other words, we're talking about this. Yeah. Then, now, because of this, there is the aspect of, because of the change in the movement, as soon as you move towards it, naturally goes away. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's where the shyness is. It doesn't mean that the girl isn't attracted by what's happening, but the natural mood is to go away. But why would you go away? Why would you be shy? Because you feel it's a safe environment, that you can control it. Right? Because if you can't control it, why would you waste the time with shyness? You know what I'm saying? Like if I put something on the table to eat, there's, let's say, one samosa. And I say, hey, you want a samosa? But then there's the idea, there's options. Well, I don't know, maybe it's a bit early in the morning, oh, this and that. She wants a samosa, but, you know, she wants to check if there's anything else. Okay? So that'll go on as long as the option's on the table. And if the guy goes, oh, okay, if you don't want it, I'll take it. And then what's going to happen? No. You understand? So the point is that the shyness can be manifest if there's a protected environment. Because then there's options. The girl is safe. She's confident. In other words, unsafe, non-confident girls use other techniques. Now, a girl is practical. On the emotional platform, girls are always practical. Men have another idea, but they don't function the emotional field. They function in manipulating dead matter to get results in dead matter, right? It means they can go out and fix the lawnmower and mow the lawn, right? The lady may not be able to do that, but the emotions that go on, that's her field. Right? Men are a bit stupid in that area. Right? So, she's able to function. So, when we're looking at it here, it goes together. There is what the girl herself can do. But if we're looking at establishing that as a basis, then that means the men have to properly take care. Therefore, the women are confident, and therefore shyness can be manifest. They go together. Does that make sense? So, does that make sense? You said, let's say you have the outgoing, girl, this and that, or, she's even, she jumps on horses, she pulls out her sword, she can do all kinds of crazy stuff like that. You know, she's the heroine in the movie. Oh, that all goes great. You know, nobody can stand up to her that until the hero comes along. And then what happens? Then shyness manifests. So when there's actual men, women are actually shy. And when there's no real men, you don't get natural feminine qualities. Because remember, as the men love to quote, women follow men. But the implications of that aren't appreciated. So therefore, if the guy thinks his wife is like a female dog, that's because he's a masculine dog. It's that simple. If he thinks she doesn't care, it's because he doesn't care. Right? It's that simple. That's where the rub comes in. So, now, putting that aside, since you can't control that, then it's just a matter of understanding that whatever it is that you're supposed to get and have is given by Krishna. He has a quota. And whatever that quota is, it will come whenever it's supposed to come. Therefore, one can feel protected under Krishna's protection and feel satisfied that Krishna's taking care. It does not that you don't make an endeavor, but you don't have to step outside the boundaries of how you'd like to behave in a day-to-day environment. In other words, the girls that use the outgoing thing, they won't use that once they've caught the guy. So that's what's the weak point. He was attracted by this outgoingness. But as soon as she's caught him and is convinced, confident that she has him, she'll stop that all completely. And she'll only use it when she's in public socially to, impress her friends, meaning the other girls. And then he'll wonder, why you do it for everyone? What about me? No, it was only a trick. But shyness is something that's inherent. It's natural. So that's something that can go on in the relationship. So that means that attractiveness that is there, the natural qualities, can be appreciated through a whole lifetime. So it's just a matter of being confident and being patient and all those qualities mentioned in Gita, intelligence, patience, all these things, that using those feminine qualities, then one will be satisfied. Does that make sense? So that's the work that the girls can do. Now it becomes a lot easier if the men know how to behave. That's why here we're talking, we're not using an untrained guy here. We're using a hero. Therefore, the intensity of her shyness, you can say, well, why aren't you shy like her? That's because you're not a hero like him. Right? Men love to be blunt, so here's blunt. Does that make sense? Does that work? Okay. So we'll end here. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi.